Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of Life After Corporate. And in our series, The Great Resignation Meets the Great Do-Over, how women are reinventing their success as a coach or consultant. And if you're new to our show, welcome home. This is the place where you get the straight advice that you can rely on how to launch a coaching, consulting, or other service-based business, even if you've never launched a business before. And today we're having a very important discussion with Julie Thomas, the CEO of Value Selling Associates, which is a global sales training company that offers a very practical methodology for selling on value, not on price. And I have a special place in my heart for Julie because we work together at Gartner and I practice value selling. It's part of the methodology that I bring to the table today as an entrepreneur. And the reason why I'm excited is because we've been talking for these past several episodes about women and aligning to your value. And I just completed my pricing masterclass where we talked about moving from selling time to pricing based on your return on advantage or ROA. And I did an entire episode on return on advantage in an earlier episode. And which you can look for in the show notes, because there are a lot of topics that I want to cover in this conversation today, including how Julie, instead of launching a new business, bought an existing company and how that might be a great path for you to become an entrepreneur, but also how value selling applies to not just big companies, but to individuals who are selling their services. And why women in particular need to pay attention as sales is a path to executive leadership as well as entrepreneurship. Because sales is everything. Sales is the lifeblood of your business. If you can't sell, you can't serve. You can't deliver an impact through your work. And it reminded me, Julie, of those early days at Gartner when I was in marketing and you were in sales leadership and later sales training. And I wondered why more people aren't treating sales this way. But before we dive in, Julie, your path to becoming an entrepreneur is very different from most of our listeners who started their own coaching and consulting or services business. You decided to acquire a company. So first of all, welcome, Julie Thomas, to Life After Corporate.
Thank you, Deb. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Well, I guess the first assumption that you're making in terms of how you introduced me is that it was a conscious choice to become an entrepreneur. And the reality is I'm kind of an accidental entrepreneur. It wasn't really anything I set out to do, but kind of how I got here is kind of interesting. So, you know, as you mentioned, we worked early on in my career, really my first real sales job. It wasn't my first job, but my first substantive sales job was at Gartner in the early days. And probably 1 or 2 years into my sales career, Gartner leadership brought in the value selling framework. And really the reason they brought us in at that time was we were starting to get increased competition. But the reality is we were very technically astute at selling our services. But we weren't astute at talking about the impact of technology to the business. And so our value proposition was always like, hey, if you're going to buy something this year, buy my services because I can save you some money, which was great to get the initial sale, but then it made the renewal really hard if they weren't going to buy again the next year. And so we were really kind of going through this transition as a company that we needed to focus on the value of our services in the vacuum of technology acquisition and focus on technology management. So fast forward, my career kind of at Gartner took off. I attribute value selling to a big part of that. It made sense to me. I became a sales manager, a regional vice president of sales, lo and behold, they asked me to take over training, and I became very good friends with the founder of Value Selling. I was his customer, and he happened to be my neighbor. We happened to live in San Diego. He was from San Diego. So he kind of welcomed me into his social circle, and we'd become good personal friends. In 2003, Gartner was going through some leadership changes, and I was given the option to kind of move back to Connecticut or sever from the company, and I chose to sever from the company. So here's my situation. It's literally the Friday before Christmas. My boss transfers me to HR so we can talk about how we're going to unwind a 16-year, you know, Merry Christmas, 16-year career at Gartner. I had a one-year-old and a three-year-old, and my husband was an executive for a company here in San Diego. So I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was pretty sure I was going to do something. I mean, I was one of those moms that knew I would be a better mom if I had somewhere else to go during the day, at least for part of the day. So I started talking to Lloyd about joining his firm as a trainer. I could teach value selling. I was pretty sure I could sell value selling to customers. And at the time, he took me out to dinner and said, "Hey, Julie, I have a different idea. I want to retire." At the time, he was in his mid-60s. He had taken on a business partner. As some business partnerships go, they were kind of getting a divorce, for lack of better words. And their resolution for their breaking up their business partnership was, let's sell the company, because neither one of us want to buy the other one out. So that created an opportunity for me. So I put together a plan, and I acquired the company within 6 months with kind of a 4-year earnout for the CEO. So he mentored me. I didn't know what I was doing. I really did not know what I was doing.
This is such a great story, Julie. I mean, really, because I mean, listen up, people, if you've been laid off from your job or, you know, somehow severed in this period of time, I mean, it's not that you fell into it. It's that you had already put together a strong foundation for a segue into something that you were already very good at, and happened into this incredible opportunity where the founder was ready to retire. And, you know, that must have been scary, though, with two small babies at home and acquiring a business. So what went through your mind as you were thinking through those first few months of, you know, is this something that I really want to do?
Well, I was scared to death. I mean, because even though it was a 4-year earnout, I wrote him a 7-figure check with my husband. And I remember going to the bank and getting the cashier's check and literally trembling as I drove over to the closing. And, you know, it was your typical kind of closing, just like you would buying a house with myself and the partners I was buying out and all of our attorneys sitting around the table and, you know, initialing all this paper. But it just made sense. I mean, it was just kind of a culmination of things. Had I not moved to San Diego, I probably wouldn't be here. Had I not been at Gartner and grown up through the ranks with a sales leadership team that I learned so much from, because we were there in this tremendous growth period. I didn't even know what I was learning. I was learning so much because it was just the way we did. And we had really, I think, visionary leadership that helped us through that growth stage. You know, it just kind of happened. And I was open to it. And I had the resources to do it because it was a 4-year earnout. I did not draw a salary for the first 4 years, which was hard for me. I'd gotten married a little bit later in life. I had my own money. And so it was hard all of a sudden to not have my own salary for 4 years. That was my own mental block. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't my husband. It was all me. Mm-hmm. I was raised by a single mom and kind of was like, oh, how does that work? I kind of valued that independence, you know, and here's where it ended up. And it's been a tremendous, tremendous ride.
So fast forward now, I mean, how big is Value Selling? How many employees do you have? What does the company do?
Yeah, so we partner with business-to-business sales organization and sales professionals to help them improve or optimize their sales productivity. And we do that with our proprietary sales methodology called the Value Selling Framework, which is a skill set, a tool set, and hopefully also a mindset of how you better engage prospects to qualify, create and qualify opportunities that you can win. And the whole premise of value is that I have the skill set to differentiate my offering in your mind as the buyer to create enough value to compel you to not do business with the lowest cost alternative, but to buy my premium product. And all of our customers, you know, sell something that they are not the low cost alternative in their space. So they need to be able to differentiate that. It's really those skills and how that skill set and that tool set go together that makes value selling so unique in the marketplace.
Yeah. And it is, you know, it's the lifeblood of the business. And it is about having high value conversations, because for anyone who is listening to this podcast in my circle, you are not the low cost service provider. In our last episode, we talked to Chris Kenny about high ticket selling and how, you know, you mentioned mindset. It's so important to step into the mindset of being able to propose something that is a higher price point than the competition. How do you train your value selling associates into stepping into that mindset for themselves on proposing value selling to the companies you sell to?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's interesting to sell a sales methodology to sales leaders. Our clients are by and large sales leaders or sales enablement leaders, but they're the people that are running these organizations. So if you want to convince them that you have what it takes to change the behavior, because that's what training is all about. It's changing behaviors. It's teaching people what to do, not what they need to know. You better be pretty good at it. So we have a certification process where you not only have to get certified that you can master what we teach, we call it drinking our own champagne, because you have to model it to a sales rep. If I make a lousy sales call on you and you're the person deciding, you know, who's going to train my salespeople, and I can't manage a conversation with you, the probability that you're going to hire me is slim to none. But if I make a really good sales call on you and we have a fabulous conversation and I help you realize some things that maybe you didn't think about and then provide you the confidence that I can solve those problems that matter to you, then you are likely to kind of lean in and say, okay, I will not only bet on value selling, I want Julie or whoever, you know, on my team to lead that charge. So we kind of have two sales. You got to sell them on the methodology as well as yourself as a change agent.
Yeah, it's so funny. One time I was having what I call an enrollment conversation, which was a sales call with someone who eventually became a private client. And she said to me, I'm aware of what you're doing and you're doing it extremely well. So, you know, I understand that there's two levels to this because you're selling the sales. Let's talk about women, you know, for a second, and women in sales and women as a sales career. So we were both, I had a short stint in sales before I hopped over to marketing at Gartner. You had a long sales career. It's a wonderful way for women to take a leadership position. One of my clients, Heidi Solomon Orlick, created Girls Who Sell to get more younger girls into sales as a viable career. And certainly all of our listeners are going to have to learn selling. What do you think some of the biggest challenges are for women who are getting into a sales career, or women consultants or coaches who are learning to sell their own services?
I think a couple of things. I think women are naturally excellent sales reps. I mean, we can get two-year-olds to eat stuff. So we should, by definition, be able to influence, you know, behaviors of others as well. So I think women have some natural tendencies to sell for a couple reasons. We tend to be good at nurturing and at empathy and at listening to people. And sales is a skill set that involves all of those things. A lot of people think, well, sales, you have to be an extrovert. I have to be able to pitch. And that is not what selling is. Selling is building relationship, building trust, and then solving relevant problems for people who have the ability to take action and solve those problems with your products and services. So it's pure communication. So I think, first of all, women have many natural abilities that lead to good sales outcomes because we're just natural communicators and naturally we have empathy and focus on the others. I'm not saying men aren't good at that, but men tend to vast stereotype, have a lot more ego that sometimes gets in the way of listening and establishing empathy because there's just some different dynamics. I had a sales leader that I worked for that you know very well, Deb, early on, and he was very clear with me once. He goes, I would hire a woman over a man if everything was equal every time, because women are better at building relationships and they don't get in their own way as often. So again, vast generalization. Now, what are women afraid of? Women are afraid that they will be perceived as pushy. Women are afraid that they don't have the credibility. It's some of the confidence that I think gets in the way of women wanting to sell. And then understanding it's not even about you or your product. It's about understanding the need of your target buyer. And, you know, nobody wants to be sold today. But when we have recognized problems that are worth solving, we will go buy stuff all day long. So selling has really evolved to, I think, facilitating buying as opposed to pushing product and service, which is the kind of nasty stereotype of our profession.
That's beautiful that sales is really about providing a service and highlighting that need for people who you're having a conversation with, because sales is just a conversation. And as you said, it's about listening and about identifying, I'll use my term here, identifying the gap, you know, what's going on that's preventing you from getting to where you want to be, and then providing that solution. I think with women entrepreneurs, it gets really tricky for them in that they're selling themselves. And I think the own self-value, self-perception, am I good enough? And, you know, will I deliver? Am I an imposter? I think all of that kicks up in their minds when they're in the situation of, hey, here's someone who could be an ideal prospective client for me. And, you know, I really want this sale. So let's talk about the mindset of the woman entrepreneur. I know you do a lot of volunteering with eWomen Network. So tell me about what you've learned about women entrepreneurs and maybe where they get hung up in the sales process.
Well, I think there's a couple of things that they get hung up with. And the first is we spend so much time defining our product. And even if you sell a service, you somehow are trying to productize that. I'm selling a retreat. I'm selling a coaching program. I'm selling, you know, something that somehow is packaged, that we forget to make the connection and be relevant to our target buyer. You know, I become a health coach because I'm really health conscious myself. I've mastered it. I've dropped the 20 pounds. I know how to cook and eat healthy. And I just want to attract everybody to that. And they sometimes struggle to find how to make that relevant connection as opposed to just talk about what their story is and their journey. So I think that's the first gap. You've got to focus on the buyer, not on your product first, to have a value first conversation. And that means you've got to be incredibly relevant. You need to identify your target buyer really clearly and then know how you're going to help them. Some of the women entrepreneurs that I talk to don't know how to niche their market. Mm-hmm. So your market isn't every divorced woman in Long Island. It's just not. It's women in this particular zip code, in this particular circumstance, and here's the value I can bring them. So I think one of the challenges that many women entrepreneurs have is really niching down their market to understand how they can best position themselves. Because the inclination is to say, well, it's anybody who's kind of like me. So it's anybody who's divorced. It's anybody who's going through a health challenge. It's anybody who's, you know, got three kids, a minivan, and no time, and really trying to think that through.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've kind of hit on all my buttons. I've been a health coach. I've been a relationship coach to women after divorce. But until I found my real secret sauce, which was what I did at Gartner in my second tenure, which was product development and finding that gap in the market. Now, when you purchased Value Selling Associates and you started building this business, coming from a sales background and understanding the training methodology was easy for you. What was hard for you?
Everything else. Honestly, you know, I had at Gartner had a job where you could maybe argue I loosely had some P&L responsibility in that I didn't really manage the P side of it, but I had a budget that I was managing too. So I had a little bit of financial, practical business financial experience, but I had never really managed a P&L. I had just met a budget. I had never done marketing. I had always been in sales and sales leadership. So I had never done, I had never built a website. I had never bought technology for the infrastructure of the company. I certainly understand accounting. And if you remember, my first job at Gartner was actually in accounting.
That's right. Oh my gosh.
At the time, I was 2 years out of college and all these other people that were exactly like me, I thought they were exactly like me, were these young, what we called them account reps early on at Gartner, because we were the inside salespeople.
That's right.
So we were partnered with the outside person. We did everything they told us to do. Plus we were responsible for renewals, but mostly we just did whatever the account executive that we were partnered with told us to do and partnered with them. And I was seeing all these people. And then I was in the accounting department that was calculating the commissions. And I was like, whoa, I am pretty sure
I need a new job.
And I was like, I can do, you know, and think of who the other account reps that were at the time. And these are names that you may remember, Kathy Copeland, Steve Tonra. And I was like, I can do what they're doing. I know I can do what they were doing. And so I would tell our VP of sales every day, a guy that we both worked for at the time named Rick Smith, I'm your next account rep. I'm your next account rep. And he had three RVPs and two of them told me, no, you're in accounting. You can never be in sales. And then one of them said, okay, I'll give you a shot. And at the time that was Andy Holtvedt and it was the vendor region. And I ended up being the account rep for this new formed vendor team. And then the way we measured performance and everything, I was a top performer for the next 2 years. And that kind of really launched my sales career. I was promoted. I took over the second largest account that Gartner had as an account manager, Digital Equipment Corporation, in my first foray into field sales or outside sales.
Yeah, I know this is a sideline, but you followed my path because I started with Andy and then I made the leap to the East Coast and then to marketing. And it was a great team. It was a great team for sure.
Yeah.
Great guys on that team. So when you took over value selling, now you're, you know, you had the finance, but now you're buying technology, you're marketing, you're growing your company. How did you get through those early days? Like, how did you figure stuff out?
Well, I had some good mentors. So right out of the gates, I had a good attorney because we're in the licensing business. We have to protect all of our IP. I didn't know how to do that either, by the way. That was really important. So I had a good attorney. I had a good CPA. I had Lloyd Sappington, the founder of Value Selling, who was my friend. He mentored me for a couple of years. And then I dove into what I needed to do to learn. And at the time, for me, it was joining a Vistage best practice group of other CEOs in small growing companies. And I learned a ton because in my CEO group for Vistage, initially, we had a woman who ran a law firm, a guy who ran a CPA firm, a woman who ran an HR consulting firm. So we had like all of this great expertise that became my network of mentors to help me navigate some of those things. So it was really surrounding myself with the right people, the right mentors, and the right coaches to help me get there.
Yeah, it's so important to have, you know, peer coaches as well as mentors that you hire to work with you. So, Julie, you know, what's next for value selling? I mean, we were chatting a little bit before we went live on the broadcast today that there's this great opportunity for women who did not grow up in a sales profession who are now consultants doing a variety of things around sustainability, diversity, equity, inclusion, change management, you know, you name the flavor. There are so many opportunities for women out there now to carve their own path, as well as those that are in coaching professions. You know, I'm one who helps them niche down so that you're not anyone who, but you are the one who. And, you know, get their messaging straight and have converting conversations. But the value selling methodology is something that I have probably used so much that it's unconscious in the employment of how to have a conversation and uncover that unmet, that unseen need that people have, which when you uncover it, the sale is easy from that point forward, because now you've opened up the door to matching a vision that the client has that they want to achieve that they know they can't do on their own. So with that, have you ever thought about packaging value selling for women entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs in general?
We have been thinking about that. As a matter of fact, I've been starting to work on how that might look, what that package might be. I mean, today the reality is most of our clients, we definitely have some individuals and we have online learning that any individual can buy. And so we welcome those individual sales, but we haven't really targeted those individuals from a purely how we would package up an offering for them. And most of our clients today are at the enterprise level. So as a business, historically, we haven't done a ton of like open enrollment or just sign up for this class next Tuesday type thing, because pretty much everything we've done is at the enterprise level. So we are starting to think about that. So I think you will see something like that come from us. And, you know, the good news is with the whole pandemic, the positive unintended consequence of this is people are much more comfortable learning remotely now. While we all miss being in a room together, don't get me wrong, and we miss some of the social aspects of learning, we are all more comfortable at learning, communicating, building relationship, and engaging online than ever before, which I think opens up opportunities for us to take our wealth of content and repackage it in different ways for different audiences.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing more about that. And I didn't know that there was some self-paced learning. So how would people who are listening now who want to get that sense of the value selling methodology, how would they access that? Do you have a URL that you can share?
Yeah, anybody who's interested in anything we're doing, please go to valueselling.com. And we do have a ton of free resources. So there's white papers and guides, recorded webinars, blog posts, all kinds of free resources. I do a webinar every other month that's complimentary, a newsletter once a month. So please feel free to subscribe to any of that. In addition, you'll see our e-store. And not only do we sell, you know, my book and some other things, we do sell our e-learning. And e-value selling fundamentals is our core program that's available.
That's wonderful, Julie. You know, sales is, you know, you can't serve if you can't sell. Sales is the lifeblood of any business. I know our sales leader, Follett Carter, at the time, after Rick Smith. So Follett Carter is an adjunct at University of Michigan. I made my son take his sales track and marketing course. He learned value selling.
Yeah.
And it was really great to see a new generation come through this same process, because you can always put food on your table if you can sell a service. And if you can solve a problem and you can sell your own services, then there is no glass ceiling for women leaders. You can write your own ticket. And Julie, you are just an example of that, who's someone who, with fear, writing that seven-figure check, you know, shaking, going through that closing, not taking a salary for 4 years, feeling that risk, but, you know, persevering. Like, looking back now at where you are and where you started, is there anything that you wish you knew then, or any advice that you would have for someone else who is just getting started and having those shaky feelings of like, oh my God, this is so scary?
Well, I think it's the best thing that ever happened to me, honestly. As I mentioned, I had a 1 and a 3-year-old when I came into this. You know, good, bad, or indifferent, being an entrepreneur affords you the opportunity to control your life a little more than when you're a corporate soldier in an army for a company, you know, that's headquartered 3,000 miles away. So, you know, it afforded me the flexibility that I'm really proud of. You know, at the time, I could sit down with the kindergarten teacher at the first day of school and say, I need every non-negotiable date. I need to know when the President's Day song and dances, everything on my calendar so I can work around it. So I can't imagine having been in a corporate engine and missing some of the things I would have had to miss with my kids. The flip side of that is you work nights and weekends after you put them to bed, and you know, it's not like you're not working, but I'm pretty sure I never would have had that level of flexibility if I had been still an employee. The second thing is, you know, now I'm starting to think about how, you know, what do I do with this thing that I've built? Do I, you know, as I think about what my legacy will be, I don't know if either of my kids have any, right now they're saying, no, mom, you work way too hard. I want to go do something else. But, you know, who knows if this is something for them or if we look at that. We've grown tremendously. We've expanded. Our programs are translated into 17 languages today. And, wow. You know, if you want value selling in Russia, I can get you there. You know, if you want value selling in Turkey, we can do that too. So that's kind of exciting, but it's just, it's more rewarding than anything I've ever done. You know, it's a risk reward thing. And again, I'm an accidental entrepreneur. I mean, I argued with people once when they said, "Oh, you're an entrepreneur." I'm like, "No, I'm not. I'm just running a small company. I'm still, you know, I took all the risk and at a time where nobody else wanted it at that point. So it's been good from that standpoint."
Is there anything looking back that you would have changed?
I would have done a few things differently in the legal. You know, we all learn in the hindsight things that you should have in legal contracts. I mentioned that there were two partners. One of them, I'm still very close with, Lloyd Sappington, who was the creator of this, but he had taken on a partner that didn't have the level of integrity of Lloyd and kind of did some sneaky things. So in hindsight, I would have worded some things differently to maybe give myself a little protection. He didn't hurt me other than he didn't hurt the business financially other than he took a lot of my time early on because he was just not playing nice in the sandbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Julie, this has been fabulous. And to our listeners, if you are a coach or consultant and you're struggling with the sales process, the value selling methodology is tried and true. It's been tested by the best. And you can get access to the blog and free trainings at valueselling.com. And Julie, thanks so much. I mean, I felt like this was part reunion of Deb and Julie catching up and part sharing an alternate path to business ownership or entrepreneurship, however you want to look at it, was something that is so vital to the success of every business, large or small, which is being able to sell your services by being a good listener, having empathy, and being able to propose viable solutions. So Julie, thank you so much. And for Life After Corporate listeners, we will see you real soon. Take care.
Awesome. Thanks, Deb.
Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.